On this entry of Animation Deliberation, we are continuing our coverage of Young Justice Season 3, aka Young Justice Outsiders. Stay tuned for that right after some ads we have no say over whatsoever. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah. All right, folks. Welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. I'm your host, J. Scotty St. Clair, and I am joined by the other half of Animation Deliberation, the dream team that started it all, Mr. Zuhair Ali. What's up, Zuhair? How are you?
I'm well and then feeling the Astra. How are you?
I couldn't have said it better myself. We're having a few technical difficulties this morning, but that's just kind of, I feel like that's fitting for Young Justice. Every team has to have its training and trial by fire, but we're ready to execute the mission now.
Yeah, we're still working on our Boom Tomb technology so that we can just record in person one day, but we got a little bit of time before we get to there.
Yeah. If you're not feeling well one day and you just like suddenly have a boom tube emerge from you, I'll look forward to your visit that day.
I'm feeling nauseous. Oh, hey.
Anyway. So I do want to say right off the top, you know, Young Justice is kind of the show that was our bread and butter. It was the show that this podcast started our coverage. We were looking forward to season four, and we finally have the announcement of season four very, very soon. So I do apologize for kind of the sporadic nature of our coverage and the fact that we're kind of down to the wire here, but we definitely want to give due diligence to season three. With that being said, I know we've gotten some feedback that pertains all the way back to season one as well as season two. So the plan there is once we get through season three, as well as season four, we're just going to kind of do a catch-all feedback episode for all of Young Justice. So continue to send that stuff in to animationdeliberation@gmail.com. We definitely appreciate it. On the other side of housekeeping, we did have that September review contest in which we got a whopping 137 new 5-star reviews. So I'm incredibly grateful for that. Zuhair, we're going to start reading some of those reviews, and you've got one queued up for us today, correct?
All right, so Heart This Game says, awesome. As a huge animation fan, this podcast is perfect for me. I love the discussions and banter so much. The what-if coverage has been my favorite. I'm glad you like the what-if stuff. It was awesome being able to cover something MCU. I didn't think that they'd actually come up with an animated series, and of course, they were like, oh, snap, Zoo and J. Scotty are doing an animation podcast, we should definitely make an animated show just for them. So thank you, Marvel, and thank you, Heart This Game, for your feedback.
Yeah. What If has been a ton of fun to cover. I'm a huge MCU fan, and I know you are as well, Zuhair. So not only was it just a ton of fun to coverage, it was a huge growth opportunity for the show. So I'm really excited for season two and was extremely satisfied with season one. So good times.
Yeah, for all the Marvel fans that are hopping into our show for the first time, thank you for coming. We do talk DC, so if you ever do have a superhero shortage with MCU and want to pick up some DC content, we'll tell you the ones to go to.
Oh, yeah. Well, we cover it all here. We cover it all. DC, Marvel, anime, independent, Dark Horse, Vertigo, what have you. Even I'm excited to cover some things that aren't even necessarily connected to comics. Like we brought up Samurai Jack a number of times on this show. So
Simpsons.
Oh yeah, that's right. We did a Diverge and do the Simpsons that one time. Yeah, never know. That could happen again. But let us talk some DC, specifically Young Justice. On this particular episode, we're covering part two of season three, and that's episodes 7 through 12. So Zuhair, we didn't really talk about it up front, but, you know, usually when we do these coverage, we kind of break it down. We do a little bit of a hybrid of episode by episode while simultaneously kind of covering character arcs. So I kind of put the ball in your court. Do you want to bring up a particular episode first, or a particular character, or a particular through line that stood out to you in these episodes?
I think the one that I want to start with is probably, for lack of a better word, like the most boring of the set, and that is the first episode. They do have a good habit of, like, when there's like a really strong episode, they have one that's just, it feels a little fillery. And I feel like this first episode of Vandal Savage kind of did that, where it was just kind of like off to the side of what we're doing. And of course, it might be relevant later. It might not. Like I said, I've only seen this set like once or twice. So it is kind of like refreshing my memory as we go. But the first episode was, you know, cool seeing Vandal Savage's backstory, kind of how tight his relationship with Darkseid is. After seeing the Suicide Squad, I know who Starro is now. So when that popped up, I was like, oh my God, there's like a whole like level of excitement to this, because I actually know like who this is and the importance of that character. So that was kind of like a fun moment for me. And we get introduced to Vandal Savage's daughters. One being recurring in a later episode, you know, having ties with League of Shadows and whatnot. So it's interesting to see where this goes, but I feel like in this set of episodes that we're reviewing, this had like the least impact on these few episodes. What were your thoughts on it?
No, I can agree with what you're saying in terms of it being kind of a quote-unquote filler episode and feeling a little bit more disconnected from the rest of the proceedings. The one exception to that, I will say, is the appearance of Darkseid. I mean, with this whole season, we talk about like the opening sequence. It's got that whole, the Earth kind of turning into apocalypse. So I feel like this was the first time we really got some idea of what Darkseid's and even Vandal Savage's kind of end goal is. In terms of this season. But I actually really, really liked this episode quite a bit for all the things that you brought up. Just getting that backstory for Vandal Savage. It was the first time we got the Victor Stone name drop. I did love that there was a nice little meta commentary when the new team was kind of sitting by the fire and they brought up the Batman versus Superman discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of my biggest takeaways was the fact that Vandal Savage has, you know, portrayed so many different characters throughout history, including Genghis Khan, but we learned when he was Marduk in Babylonia that he had a daughter called Ishtar, as well as a son, Nabu, and that was Dr. Fate. Like, that was a huge revelation to me.
Yeah, because have we seen them interact directly in the series?
I don't think so.
Because I feel like at some point, Noma would be like, oh, what's up, Dad?
Yeah, because I might be mistaken, but the only time I can really think that Dr. Fate was like actively in the proceedings was when either he was fighting Clarion, in which Vandal Savage wasn't present, or it was the Injustice Society. And I don't think Vandal Savage was present for that either. He's always kind of been more behind the scenes. He had his, you know, his little scrap with Kid Flash, but that's kind of the thing in this episode. He and Lex Luthor kind of discuss where their various players and assets are, and he's like, okay, there's no other opportunity. I'll step up and do what needs to be done, like I have so many times throughout history. And I think it's pretty interesting. The like description for this episode describes him as Earth's greatest hero, and even Cassandra, who, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Cassandra is supposed to be Ishtar, right?
I thought Ishtar was, like, one of his first daughters, and he's had, like, multiple daughters since then. Like, he's immortal, but his daughters, like, die off throughout time.
Well, yeah, I wondered, because, yeah, they talk about how he's kind of, like, the first meta-human. They talk about how humans, Homo sapiens, had an evolutionary advantage over the Neanderthals, and then the meta-humans were kind of the next evolution of that. And Vandal Savage was the first, and he had his sons as Genghis Khan that impressed Darkseid in the first place. So I wondered if Cassandra was potentially Ishtar, and that was maybe one of her like metagene abilities, is that she had some level of immortality or maybe just prolonged life. I don't know, because we find out that he's like at least 50,000 years old.
Well, what leads me to believe that is the fact that he kind of offs one of his daughters at the end of the episode. So that was Cassandra's older sister.
Yeah.
So I feel like he just, you know, has mates and still has been like reproducing and like raising kids, but they naturally die off.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it's said for certain that she's the older sister. Obviously, she looks physically older, and she is of a different ethnicity. So I think you're right. He's sired like a lot of different children from different wives and whatnot. But I kind of wondered about the nature of that relationship. It was played at the beginning that Olympia was supposed to be like the older sister instructing her, and have you heard the story of the bear? But throughout the episode, you learn more and more that she's obviously not all there mentally. She keeps on bringing up the story of the bear, but not only that, when she's like looking at the tablet and observing the armada, she kind of like spaces out and Cassandra has to step in. So I really wasn't expecting Vandal to do what he did, but it is interesting to see like the admiration that his daughters still, both of his daughters still have for him, and Cassandra justifies that it was a mercy kill, and it kind of seems like it was. I mean, it's still murder, but
yeah, because at the end he says like take care of your sister, and then like any daughter of Vandal Savage deserves the funeral of a god. So I think they made it pretty clear that they were all kind of his kids throughout time.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose that's fair. The other thing that I guess is worth bringing up is that the new team, we've got Forager, we've got Brionne, Prince, the Markovian Prince Brionne, and then Halo, aka Violet. They all get the opportunity to get their own super suits as well as pick their superhero monikers, which I thought provided some pretty funny scenes. You know, Brionne's first suggestion for his name is Hot Lava.
So stupid. I love how quick Artemis started laughing at that.
And she says it sounds like a stripper name, and then that gives Dick the great opportunity to be like, that's real good coming from Tigress.
I love when they show their humanity a little bit and their just relationship between each other.
Oh, yeah, that's honestly one of the best part of the shows is the friendships and the relationships that form. And no exception here. I mean, we'll talk about it in later episodes, but there are some budding romances. Actually, I guess in this episode in particular, we really get the first major swings for Jefferson and Helga, Dr. Jace's relationship. It was a little cheesy for me, the whole shushing each other in the hallway, but I thought it was kind of funny the way they make the allusions to it. It's obviously the show's gotten a little bit more mature as it's gotten towards season 3, and it's been on DC Universe as opposed to like Cartoon Network. But so they have when she pulls him into the hotel room, but then in a later episode, someone talks about how Helga should thank Jefferson, and he goes, oh, she already has. And then they both look kind of embarrassed, and then there's like an eagle that screams in the background. I'm just like, what is this?
I mean, at least they were quick about stuff like that, but this is the first, like, they made it very clear that they had like a no rating on this season, so I think this is kind of like a way to lead in to like how dark and how the humor can be, because we also had like Livewire, she had like her sexual innuendos for everything, but also in regards to like how graphic things got, because after that episode we had the whole thing with Lobo and that was pretty graphic, we had the whole Cyborg thing, that was pretty graphic. So I think this was kind of like for them to have opportunities to be like, hey, this is kind of like a taste that, just a heads up, things are about to get dark. Like, we're crossing lines that Cartoon Network wouldn't let us do then.
Yeah, that's all fair. And speaking of crossing lines, the one other thing I had to bring up about this episode is Forager fights dirty. He'll cross that line, so watch out.
Yeah, you're it. speaking of like them getting their suits and all that, like, when they all got dressed up and she was like, Forager is always naked, and like Halo just wouldn't look at him. And later on, like when he loses the show, it's like, oh, now I understand being naked. And again, Halo's like, oh, now I'm not supposed to look at you.
Yeah, it's pretty funny stuff. But Anyway, anything else you want to mention on episode 7, which I suppose we should bring up was titled Evolution? Not only do we see the evolution of the team, but we also get the evolution of Vandal Savage and the metahumans. So,
she added another color. Her green aura makes holograms now.
Oh, yeah. Excellent point. Yeah, she just continued to up her arsenal, and yeah, that's an excellent point. She showcases the holograms, and then Dick mentions that they have to basically start from scratch in terms of their training.
I do like both of their suits, too. Violet's is exceptionally awesome because, like, it still has, like, the stealth option. It's just the gray and black, but, like, just the little accents of color throughout. It's really well done. That's a great design choice.
I'm quite a fan of hers as well. I like the little color accents that speak to her various powers. It does remind me a little bit of Spider-Gwen's. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but
it's kind
of evocative of that. Yeah. And then on the other side of thing, Brion, instead of hot lava, he decides to settle on Geoforce. And I will say, I am a fan of the color green, so it appeals to me anyway. But with the whole, like, head sock kind of gauntlet, whatever you call that thing, there's a term for it, but it's eluding me right now. It reminds me quite a bit of Firestorm, if you're familiar with that character.
From the CW shows, yeah.
Yeah, I figured with you having watched the CW shows, you'd be at least a little familiar with him.
And Sam Wilson's Captain America.
Yeah, he's got it too.
Headsock. I can't get over that term now.
I think that actually might be what it's referred to as. But there are other terminologies for it as well.
Well, one thing that made me uncomfortable about this episode is, like, right after the head snapping scene, they roll to the credits, and I was like, this episode was dedicated to the memory of Miguel Ferrer?
Ferrer, yeah.
Yeah, who passed away of throat cancer, but it was just a weird thing to have, like, after somebody's neck got snapped. Just made me a little uncomfortable.
Well, I can see where you're coming from, but he does... Vandal Savage has the line, like, give her a funeral, like, fitting of the gods, so I kind of saw why they might have seen it as a really appropriate, like, nod, because Miguel Ferrer did the voice of Darkseid, Vandal Savage, in Vandal Savage's previous appearances. And then, just for those MCU fans that are listening, Marvel Cinematic Universe fans that are listening, Miguel Ferrer did appear as the president... or the vice president, excuse me, in Iron Man 3, who ended up being...
Who that is?
No need to go into spoilers. Yeah, that's Miguel Ferrer.
Oh.
So, yeah. Yeah. And then he was on either Law & Order or one of the NCISs or CSIs. Forgive me for not knowing, but yeah. He's a pretty celebrated actor, so R.I.P.
Yeah, just so I guess just to wrap up this episode, I think this is the last time that the whole team kind of, like, worked nicely together, because as we go into the other ones, there's a lot of conflicts between Brion's lack of patience.
Patience is a major theme, yeah, especially for Brion, and there's certainly some friction, some tectonic plates, some volcanic personalities. All right, I'll stop. But with that last episode, episode 7, I mentioned the appropriateness of the title Evolution. But I really appreciate the title for episode 8, Triptych, because I don't know what your affinity for the world of art or art history is, but I guess you probably know, given your photography nature, you probably are pretty familiar with what a triptych is, no?
Yeah, we've had to do assignments where it's like, we had to present a diptych and a triptych, so we had to had to present like a set of photos that were all like relative to each other.
Right. So... Yeah, and I figured as much, and given my, exposure to the art world, and I'm a big fan of art history, took a number of classes, triptychs are when you have a series of either three images or three paintings that are connected by a theme or tell a story, but not necessarily in the order that you expect. So this episode was very appropriately titled. We have the three seemingly connected but unconnected and told out of order story that essentially is revealed to be the origin of Shade, who I loved everything about Shade. I love the character design. I love the power set. Just really creepy and unique from anything we've seen on the show thus far.
Yeah, it was a really cool design, especially towards the end when he comes in with his top hat and everything. I was like, ooh, Dapper Shade.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Kind of like Jack the Ripper Victorian era vibes. But speaking of those three various stories that we got, it's also kind of echoes the fact that we've got three various teams in the works. We've got what Jefferson likes to call Batman Incorporated, which I like.
My favorite. And then,
yeah, yeah. And then there's the Justice League Forthright with Diana and Caldor at the helm. And then there's Nightwing's team. And then they all bring various reports to each other in which they reveal the larger plot that kind of speaks to Shade's origins that I alluded to. But those stories are, we do, the first one we get is Shade, Livewire, who is an electricity-based villain that you mentioned earlier. And then, is it Mist?
Yeah, yeah.
Mist. They attack Star Labs to steal a device and are assisted by Cheshire. It's the first time we've seen Cheshire in a while. Always nice to see her. She's a favorite. And then we get the team's scuffle with the villains on the runway, in which Tigress gets the Santa Prisca intel, excuse me, from Jade. And then there's Tim Drake's report to Batman on the Clayface and Mad Hatter ongoings, which was really great stuff. I love Tim Drake's little team that he assembled of young lady Avengers. Who was it? It was Arrowette, Orphan, and...
Spoiler.
I'm missing one. Spoiler, yeah. I'm only familiar with Arrowette. I did not know who Spoiler or Orphan was, but Orphan in particular definitely had me interested, especially with her whole deciding to attack first and ask questions later. She kind of...
She's such I wondered, a savage! Is this
yeah, exactly. Arrowette's like, did you know that was Clayface, or did you just not care?
She seems to be like one of those like sworn to silence type characters, which honestly is probably why Batman recruiters like, oh, you're not answering me at all? Yeah, you're hired. You're good.
yeah, yeah, possibly. And the only thing we really, I'm not sure if she gets any spoken dialogue at all, but I noticed towards the end of the fight, like part of her mask had kind of been ripped up. So you do get the reveal that she's got some blonde hair and I think maybe a blue eye, but not 100% sure. But I'm hopeful that we'll get to learn more about Spoiler and Orphan.
Yeah, they're able to hold their own ground pretty well. It's interesting how much Green Arrow's involvement has been with Batman Inc. too, because it was of like, you know, they had their spat at the beginning of between him and Canary. So yeah. You were wondering like how much the involvement was going to be, but the fact that he still has like recruits working with Batman and stuff shows that he was pretty adamant about not liking how the Justice League was operating, but was still comfortable working with Bruce Wayne, despite how questionable his actions are.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And it is interesting that Green Arrow is like so absent from the proceedings, and Black Canary as well. But, I mean, obviously this is Young Justice, so the show kind of has a tradition of introducing us to new characters. But Black Canary had always kind of been the one that acted as the quote-unquote guidance counselor to the team. But I guess we've gotten to the point that some of the earliest members, like I'm thinking of like McGann, she's almost like kind of stepped into that role where she is serving the role that Black Canary once served.
And a lot of them are working with the League now too, so I feel like characters like True. Static Shock, Wonder Girl, people of that nature who still are in the Watchtower probably rely on Canary, but like all the people that are on the ground are kind of doing their own thing is where Megan kicks in.
Yeah, true. I'm glad that you brought up Static Shock, because Jefferson, when he has his pillow talk with Helga, he's kind of got that whole questioning himself, and I'm glad that he had like the fact that he brought up the fact that he left Virgil in the wind. I really hope that comes full circle. I'm really loving everything with Black Lightning. He's a character. I watched a fair amount of the CW stuff, but I never made it to the Black Lightning series. I'd kind of fallen off at that point. But I really love the complexity of his character, and I know that he's a father, so it's interesting to see him have this interplay with these younger characters. But it just doesn't sit right with me that Virgil was, you know, his protege, and he left him out in the wind. And it, not to get too ahead of things, but it kind of seems like there's potential for Cyborg to kind of be taken under his wing as well.
But, well, I watched the first season of Black Lightning, which kind of gave me enough about the character to know that him and his wife had issues, like divorce issues and stuff like that, because he was, you know, getting hurt being a superhero too much. He has two daughters, and both of those daughters, like, end up being metahumans as well, but, like, his involvement is, like, limited. So this is one of those things where it's kind of like you couldn't have the balance between the hero life and the personal life. So we're seeing that character trait from the show, and what I imagine is from the comics, I wouldn't know because I don't read them, kind of come into this too. So there's a good balance between, like, what they show in the CW series that kind of give you an idea of, like, what the character's about when you see them in this show.
Okay. He's kind of world weary. He's done his time, so he's kind of wondering whether it's his time to be out of the game or if he should be, instructing the next generation, or maybe steering them away from a similar lifestyle.
Yeah,
I think that's all good and gripping stuff to bite onto. So I'm really appreciating his inclusion in the proceedings.
But with him, it's just, like, really funny because, like, the meme has been going around for years about, like, the dialogue between, I can absorb lightning. Yeah, but you never had black lightning. Like, oh my god, who wrote that line? But then when I was watching this episode, like, I forgot that Livewire was just, like, making all these sexual innuendos, like, throughout it anyways. So it was kind of fitting, but at the same time, I was just kind of like, wow, what a line.
Yeah.
I have never seen, like, Young Justice content be popular on Facebook as much as I've seen that scene, that dialogue.
That's funny. That's hilarious. On that note, though, I do appreciate the fact that Kaldor mentions that Mist and Livewire, they're not hardened criminals. There's hope that they can be rehabilitated, so they're not.
Like, they're minors. There's a chance they were under, like, mind control, nanotech mind control.
But then I did mention we've got the first appearance of Jade in a while, and it feels like anytime Jade shows up not too long afterwards, you're going to have the appearance of everybody's favorite bad sportsmaster.
Yeah. He's still got it.
Yeah. So that's actually the third story in this triptych that we got. His prison transport jailbreak, in which he frees Brick. Brick is kind of always this character that's popped up through the seasons, and I love how they just kind of fully played into the fact that he's just there kind of to serve as cannon fodder and just get captured again.
Yeah.
You're just like, I have the worst luck. And it's like, yeah. Aquaman tells me, you have no idea how lucky you actually are. And we learn later on he is actually pretty lucky, because the only reason they've been breaking these metahumans out is to put them under control through the use of nanobots. And that's kind of when the three teams converge together and reveal all the various findings, we find out that Branchwater, this organization that is facilitated by Simon Stagg and Stagg Industries, they've been exploiting and trafficking metahumans. So,
Billy Batson and Barry Allen really are the biggest set of children in the Justice League. Because,
oh, true.
I feel like both of them could have handled it alone if they weren't such dimwits.
Yeah, the fact that they got taken out by Sportsmaster.
Oh, you just got a hockey puck? Oh my god.
Seriously?
Why would you not handcuff him first and then start opening your mouth? Like, why do you have to talk so much?
Yep.
Which goes to show, like, anybody without superpowers is very capable in this universe, and nobody truly is, like, too overpowered, which is one of the things I really appreciate about the show. But just for them to be taken down that easily was hilarious.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, and I'll be honest, I had no idea that it was Barry Allen and Billy Batson at first, because they're just like, they seem like two regular guys that are talking about liking the job and just being okay with the job, but then that you have that moment where they see the trouble up ahead, and then the blonde guy gets that glint in his eyes. He's like, oh, I love this job. And
yeah, we've only seen Billy as Shazam, so it's like he's, what, 18, 19 years old now? maybe?
Yeah, he's on the older side, yeah. Relatively, compared to when we first saw him.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That was just weird to think about. Like, you keep thinking he's, like, this 10-year-old or 12-year-old or whatever.
Hmm. Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's part of the great thing about this show is the continuity. It's all there. So not only has Billy grown up, but a character that we'll definitely be highlighting later on, Beast Boy, we've seen him since he was, like, what, like, 8, 9, 10 years old? He's become a young man.
I thought he was an early teenager last season.
Oh, yeah, last season he was, but I'm talking about...
Yeah,
when we first saw him. Yeah, that's what I meant.
You're right.
Yeah. But I think what else is worth mentioning in this episode is that first initial attack on Star Labs. We did get the first appearance of Silas Stone there. And then at the end of the episode, we get the revelation that the device that was stolen was a metahuman failsafe that was actually Reach technology that was salvaged. So, and if I'm not mistaken, again, not to get too far ahead of things, but we've already kind of talked about Victor Stone and Cyborg. We do get his origin and his kind of inclusion on the team towards the end of things here. I think when Silas is trying to save him and has already used the mother box, they put him inside that metahuman failsafe is what ultimately ends up saving him, no?
I understood it as the father box kind of made a metamorphosis.
Oh, the father
thing.
Box, you're right, yeah.
I didn't think they actually put him in something. Because when they first showed it, I was like, oh, that's probably what Cyborg got put in. But then, like, the father box was, like, digging into the ground and getting, like, resources and power and stuff. So I think it just made the cocoon.
Oh, you could be right, because I do remember seeing, like, the red tubing start to, like, wrap around him and stuff like that. So maybe it just kind of, like, terraformed whatever concrete and materials were around him. And yeah, you could be right in that regard. Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was, like, really paying attention to, because I was like, is that what they... Oh, no, I guess not.
Yeah, because we talked about it so much on this show. There's no little detail that's left, you know, unturned. So I was definitely paying pretty close attention to that. Well, I say I was paying pretty close attention to it, but I still have that question.
Yeah.
But I wondered if that was something that was going to come back into play. Is, like, Cyborg going to be the, like, ultimate anti-metahuman weapon? But I suppose it's still possible.
While we're just talking about Cyborg, it was really weird getting Cyborg, like, three Cyborgs within the same year. Because we had...
Oh, right.
Justice League Cyborg, Young Justice Cyborg, and Doom Patrol Cyborg all feature at the same time.
Oh, nice.
A lot of comparisons then, going on.
Well, depending on what year that was, I think you might have also had Injustice 2 Cyborg. So there might have been four.
Oh, that's all you. I think one of the animated movies really... had him too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, look, that was the year of Cyborg.
Exactly, yeah. Don't tell Ray Fisher. But, no, I stand with Ray Fisher for the most part. Anyway, the only other thing I wanted to mention for my notes for this episode was we didn't get to spend a ton of time with Forger and Halo and the new team and whatnot, but there was that nice little exchange when, you know, people are revealing certain pieces of information and it's like, oh, that's great. Well, not so great. And then they reveal some additional information. And then Forager's like, I can't remember what gets said. Oh, no. It's the intel is coming from Jade. And they say that the intel is from Jade. And then Halo says, oh, that's great. And they're like, oh, not so great. It might be difficult to get the information from her. And then Forager goes, oh, that's excellent. And everyone just kind of looks at him. He's like, not so excellent. And they're like, no. He's like, Forager is good at this game. Yeah, he's stupid, but I appreciate stupid little things like that sometimes. Anything else you want to bring up about Triptych?
Last thing for me is just I love some good dialogue and Wonder Woman, like, getting so frustrated and, like, having that moral dilemma of, like, why aren't we just doing this together? That whole dialogue and conversation. I mean, you know how much I love Batman in the series, but the way that he was pitching his point and Diana just kept, like, coming back at him, is just, man, that whole scene was good. I'm sure Andrew really appreciated that too, because we talked a lot about, like, dialogue and scenes lately.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, it's always worth bringing that up. And I did think it was a interesting way to end the episode. Just, you know, obviously Wonder Woman is a symbol of truth with the lasso of truth and whatnot. And she questions Batman there. You expect Superman to lie under oath? He says he does. Does he expect her to lie under oath? No, he expects her to use her diplomatic position to avoid taking the stand at all. And then she leaves that question lingering to everyone else, like, what about the rest of you? Are the rest of you willing to lie? And nobody answers, but that's the last line of the episode. It was definitely a poignant way to end the episode. Like, what sacrifices are these heroes willing to make? And time again, Batman has always been one of those ones that compartmentalizes information for better or for worse. So.
And it was the younger ones whose facial expressions dropped too. You see Tim Drake kind of look down. Dick and Barbara both kind of look down. Aquaman, excuse me, was just kind of looking mm-hmm. off, just kind of like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah. I've already done this once before. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to episode 9. Titled Home Fires. With the first two, obviously the titles were like super appropriate. I don't know if I can say the same about this one. It works, but I don't know if there's anything quite as deep.
Dude, I must be really hungry right now because I'm like looking at the episode list and I kept reading Home Fries until you said fires.
Yeah. Well, just stick around for episode 10 because that's curly fries. All right.
Yeah, I need exceptional curly fries. I need brunch.
We'll get you some hash browns. Just stay strong. Stay strong.
I'm just going to head to Village Inn after this.
Okay, cool. But Home Fires. We get the return of Lobo. Good old Lobo. Everyone's favorite intergalactic bounty hunter that speaks Interlac. And I guess he was conscripted by the Light. We get the reveal at the end of the episode. I think it's Queen Bee gives us the information that, you know, Forager's, his faked death is really of no consequence. They just wanted the confirmation that Superboy and who else participated in the Markovia? Black Lightning participated in the Markovian proceedings, and then they get confirmation of the existence of Nightwing's team.
Yeah, I have the list up of the new Light, if you want the names.
Yeah, because it's 7 members. Vandal Savage makes mention of the fact that 7 is an elegant number. Yeah, so who do we got?
You got Savage, Luthor, Queen Bee, Clarion, and the newest members are Deathstroke, Ultra Human Knight, and Granny Goodness, who I imagine is a liaison between Darkseid and the Light.
Yeah, I would have to imagine. No, she's one of his lieutenants alongside Desaad. We've seen Desaad, but I think this is the first time we've seen Granny Goodness, and actually the first time we see her is in a television interview with Gordon Godfrey. And as soon as you see how much larger she is, it's kind of like a side-by-side shot, like the classic interview shot where you get to see the interviewer and the interviewee kind of looking at each other in their chairs. And I was like, wow, that's a large older woman. That has got to be Granny Goodness. Yeah. And then sure enough, they don't make us wait around. She is Granny Goodness, a.k.a. Gretchen Goodness, progenitor of the Good Goggles.
Who's buffer, her or Captain Carter?
I think I'd give the edge to, well, actually in terms of like overall power set, it's probably Granny Goodness at the end of the day.
I was going off physique.
But of physique? Well, yeah. Obviously Captain Carter. Those shoulders.
But yeah, I had no idea who Granny Goodness was until I started watching this show. So when she started getting, you know, popped up in the Snyder Cut and stuff like that, I was like, oh, I didn't realize it was that big of a deal. Because you see a grandma, you don't expect her to be like the lieutenant of Darkseid. So that was one of those things that was like, I didn't realize that she was even a villain. I was like, oh, who's this granny person that's like producing Beast Boy's show? And now I know.
Yeah. This season has borrowed a lot from Kirby's Fourth World, and you just get some really wacky and wonderful characters, and even just like you can tell by the names, like Granny Goodness, a character named Granny Goodness and Mr. Miracle, Big Barda.
Call me Gretchen.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't start calling me Gretchen, I'm gonna cry. I don't believe her.
Don't believe her at all.
Yeah, exactly. I guess one of the reasons it might be called Home Fires is because we do get Iris West is at her home hosting a reunion of sorts, and I did just think it seemed incredibly unwise to have all these various heroes and their loved ones and children all gather in one location. Like, I get everybody wants to spend time together, but you would think you would have at least some kind of sentry or lookout in place.
I mean, it comes back to the humanity of it. Like, they can't always be heroes. Like, they kind of need this moment to not only hang out, but to kind of let loose a little bit. And you have people like Will Harper and Mira, and there were heroes there. Like, I think Rocket was one of them too. True. It's not who wants to mess with, a mom's kid, right? Like, there's a whole, I feel like, added level of protection at that point.
Well, who wants to mess with him? I'll tell you who wants to mess with him. Orm, Ocean Master. We don't know it throughout the episode until the end, but yeah, he's there stalking them, counting down as the various members appear. And you brought up the fact that Rocket's there. When Rocket welcomes Karen, and Karen's pregnant, and the young child that Rocket has in her arms, I guess his name is Amistad. I've watched the episode twice, and both times I laugh out loud when the kid goes, "There's a baby in there."
That threw me off. I was like, wait, what?
it's such a funny and odd line of dialogue, and it sounds so strange coming from such a small character, but
yeah, that one threw me off. But my favorite was definitely stop calling him dad, stop calling me grandma.
Oh yeah, with Bart. Yeah, he's like, oh, spoilers.
See, there's another hero that was there.
True. Yeah, Bart was there. That's a great point. But it's not even the heroes that end up taking care of Orm. I'll just go ahead and kind of get to the end of the episode. We have Lady Shiva, who is the new enforcer for the light. She just takes Orm out. She just straight up beheads him. And it's not over the top graphic with the blood and whatnot, but you clearly see that his head is cleaved from his shoulders.
Yeah.
So.
And
pretty intense.
We've had a lot of questions of what happened to Arthur Curry in this time jump. Like, why is
true
Calder Aquaman? And my guess at this point is that there was an attempted coup. And he got Orm eventually lost, but Arthur Curry at that point felt like it was a priority to be King of Atlantis and not Aquaman, because we've seen Orm before, and he was the whole oh my king type vibe. So I'm wondering if Atlantis was basically in trouble because there was probably a coup or something like that, and he was just kind of dude, you got to be Aquaman because I can't be King of Atlantis. He's probably just leveling his priorities or something.
Yeah, that's probably a good guess there. We did, obviously, Caldor has stepped up into the role of Aquaman, so we did have that lingering question. Based on the movie, focusing a lot on the various kingdoms, I would say that your theory there is probably pretty accurate. Aquaman, or Arthur Curry, I should say, probably needs to unite the various kingdoms and can't do that to the best of his ability while serving as Aquaman. I like that speculation there. But it was nice to get some time with Mara. I think this is the first time since season one where we really just got to see her instructing young students in Atlantis in the ways of water magic or hydrokinesis, I believe it's called. But then she did have a young blonde-haired baby with her that was named Arthur. So I'm, somewhat familiar with the comics and stuff like that, but if the character of Arthur is a recent addition, I don't know if that's Arthur's son. It sounds pretty close, so I would imagine with the blonde hair and everything, it probably is the case, but I don't know if that's a character you know anything about.
Well, I typed in specifically Justice League playdate, and I'm kind of looking at a little breakdown of that scene. Mm-hmm. And what it says about that is, like, the first to arrive is the Queen of Atlantis herself, Mira, with young Arthur Curry.
Oh, whoa.
So I'm wondering if, like, Aquaman's name isn't Arthur Curry. I don't know if there's other names that he's gone by in the comics or whatnot, and or maybe, like, they just... Maybe he's, like, Arthur the Second.
Huh.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's if anybody out there that's listening does know, send us your feedback and let us know. Otherwise, I know you've seen season 3 at least once or twice, but aren't super fresh on the details. So I'll be curious just to see if that's a character that pops up, if not in season 3, potentially season 4, depending on what kind of time jump we get there.
Maybe.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, I love that whole scene with the kids.
Yeah, yeah, it was super cute seeing them zip around. Now, we do have on the other side of things our new team. They're still doing some training. So in my notes, I said Geo-Force gets an F. But while Geo-Force gets an F, Red Tornado got his android body. He finally got his android body. Because I'm thinking back on, I think it was season 1, where he was trying to, you know, transfer his consciousness into a humanoid body, but it didn't work out, so they had to, like, kind of cart it around, and it took... Oh, no, he did somewhat. He started the transfer, but he still ended up taking a lot of damage, and it was played to kind of comedic effects, but he's finally got his fully functioning and somewhat presentable human body.
Yeah, it took me a minute to realize who it was, because I was like, John, why is Martian Manhunter?
I thought the same exact thing. I thought the same exact thing until he emitted the two red tornadoes from his hands.
Yeah.
The fight with Lobo was pretty great. I made a note of the sound design when Lobo impales Halo when she's, like, airborne and trying to fly away with Forager.
That was graphic.
It wasn't so much, like, yeah. It was graphic, and even with, like, the visual depiction, you saw, like, you know, some of her innards and whatnot. It wasn't, you didn't, like, see specific organs or anything like that, but what really did stick out to me more is the sound design. Like, when that hooked blade is, like, lodged in her and he puts his boot on her back and kind of dislodges her. Ugh. It was really kind of sickening, the sound design there.
Yeah.
Kind of graphic.
Yeah, that was a lot. Like, I audibly went, ugh, as that happened as well.
Yeah, yeah. Halo's just kind of a punching bag. I guess that's with a character with that kind of power set. We've already seen her be maimed, killed, now impaled. I'm kind of worried what they're going to do to her the rest of the season here.
Yeah, that was not fun to watch.
Yeah. But she did get to get a little bit of revenge. She cut Lobo's pinky off.
Yeah.
Which was great when he tried to go for the whistle. He could no longer do that.
That
and then
was
it
funny.
Sets up the great recurring... Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. The great recurring gag of the pinky in the credits. I got a real kick out of that.
I love that it's growing, too.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if we're going to get, like, a little mini Lobo running around before too long.
Well, maybe.
Lobo might. Yakeezy Femme.
I'll leave the wittiness to you.
Don't give me too much credit here. I'm just trying to think of some of the other...
credit's a stretch.
Like, when he did think that he successfully killed Forager, he's like, "You bastages did better than most."
That was a cringy sound, too, and he was, like, crushing into him.
Oh, yeah.
But
I will say, I didn't buy it for a second, though. There was not a moment where I thought Forager was actually gone. I think they did a good job of showcasing, like, when his fist made impact on the shell, it really did seem very hollow. So I kind of like the fact that Lobo is just so confident in his ability that he's that easily duped.
Yeah. Well, job's done. I'm out.
Yep. And then you already kind of brought up the fact that Forger had his reference to being naked before, but now he's truly naked. And then they call him Guji, which I've heard of Gooey, but I've never heard of Guji, so I thought it was kind of funny and cute that Halo came up with, like, oh, you are too Guji. And then Brion's like, I don't care, I'm going to hug you anyway. And he's like, oh, you are quite Guji indeed.
What a sound.
Yeah. And then it's like in later episodes, it's kind of interesting to like have the visual continuity there. He doesn't just instantly have his exoskeleton back. You kind of get to see it harden and grow through the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, it was a good design choice.
Yeah.
And I mean, another thing that's like, they're really thoughtful on like how they've been displaying these characters. And one of the things that I've been catching on to a lot is whenever they're on Megan, they really focus on her engagement ring. Like, even on the zoomed out shot, like, you can see that it's there. So it's really cool that they're, like, very conscious about, like, adding those small things despite the designs being very simple.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. You know, as the show animation deliberation's been going on, we've covered more and more shows and different animation styles. And Young Justice certainly is a more, as you put, like, simplified animation compared to some other ones, but it just... it works because we talk about like continuity, not just in world building, but with these characters, especially after like three seasons. And like the designs have been updated. They're a little bit sharper in some ways. And, you know, faces are a little more angular in certain places and whatnot. And there's a little bit more fidelity and whatnot. But there's still just that continuity across the board when you... the action works, the environments work, the characters all work.
It's really just... working off of, like, the best things about Teen Titans.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Titans, yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's actually kind of that Warner Brothers animation studio. It's kind of their that style that they use for all of those DC animated films.
Keep it up. It's not quite... I love it.
Yeah, it's a great style. I won't call it like full-on anime, but it's kind of like anime-inspired. It seems like there was like a generation of like Western artists that were very much influenced by anime, but have kind of like meshed the anime with the comic book style. And like we said, it is fairly simplistic. There's not a ton of shading going on, but there's enough detail like there, like you bring up with the just the character models and the expressions and then... the background details. We covered the show Invincible, and there are no spoilers for Invincible, but even with a show, I feel like it's animated in a similar style. I think the action was a little more over the top in Invincible. Obviously it's more graphic, but we even talked about like we picked up on some things like in the background, some just like weird visual like flubs here and there, but there's never been anything like that in Young Justice. Which really speaks to the quality control there.
Yeah, I know how much that annoyed you about the people, like, actually walking around. It's like, did you have to animate that?
Well, it doesn't annoy me. It's just, you know.
For your standard of annoyed.
Yeah, for sure. Just a gripe. Anything else for episode 9?
Nope, let's go to Batman Inc.
Woohoo! Episode 10, Exceptional Human Beings. Yeah, we get Batman, Kitana... and Metamorpho, who I know nothing about. My only exposure to him is this episode. I really want to dive into that character. They infiltrate Santa Prisca. We got that intel about the League being run out of Santa Prisca now.
Yeah, it's really interesting how many bendy characters there are. Like Mr. Fantastic, Elongated Man, Plastic Man, Metamorpho. But the way he uses his powers was super cool, especially in a... It's funny that he was so useful in a stealth operation, but Oracle had to say, like, keep your mouth shut. Like, he's known for being a chatterer, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It was an interesting choice, and I loved how atmospheric it was when we had, like, those scenes with no dialogue where they're just stalking the henchmen, and you get the little bit of, like, rain falling, and then the henchmen get their lines of, like, stupid dialogue, just, proving that they're going to be cannon fodder. But it was kind of a great build-up. You got that tease. And just from like a visual design, I will say, we've talked a little bit about My Hero Academia, so no spoilers for that either, but there's a character, a villain character in My Hero Academia twice, who, even in my viewing, we haven't got like a ton of backstory. There was one episode that dove a little bit into his backstory, but just as soon as I saw Metamorpho and the fact that they like made reference to the fact that he might be kind of like a quippy, talking at inappropriate times kind of character, I was like, I'm getting Twice vibes.
Have you watched the whole newest season?
No, I'm only caught up with season 4.
Oh, okay. There was one episode in season 5 that was like focused just on him, but we'll cover that in another episode.
Indeed. In addition to, you know, this stealth operation with Batman Incorporated, we get the basically the setup for Victor Stone's origin. We talked about that. We get Cyborg later on, but this is kind of like Young Justice is doing the due diligence to that story. If you're familiar with the character of Cyborg, you know the story. He's the son of Silas Stone. Silas Stone is very much a workaholic who ignores his son, even though his son is a very talented football player with some exciting prospects. And then we talked about how 2017 was the year of Cyborg. Just talking about Ray Fisher a little bit, there was some behind-the-scenes talk that he wasn't super jazzed about the line "Booyah," and I'm speaking from a place of ignorance or anything like that, but just for me, like, you know, having watched Teen Titans and stuff like that, I always associated "Booyah" with Cyborg. So
yeah.
In this particular episode, I was excited for all the "Booyahs" we got. You know. With him, his football team, everybody's shouting "Booyah."
And then really quick, like, we got to see Cisco in that for people who are fans of CW Flash. I was like, oh, Cisco Ramon, that's cool. It's kind of pushing into a Walker, right. Sorry, but.
Very different hairstyle.
Very different.
Yeah, and then those two jockey guys are having like their debate about Wonder Woman or Black Canary. That was some of that humor that kind of made me roll my eyes and kind of made me reflect back on Kid Flash from season 1, you know.
Yeah.
Hitting on McGann and whatnot.
Hitting on anybody who could.
True that.
And then Cisco, much respect to him. He was like, oh, I would go for Zatanna. I was like, good man. And then you get knocked out.
Mm-hmm. I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't write that down. Yeah. Just one more reason. Yeah. You and Cisco would get along famously.
Seems like it.
I did make mention of the fact that we talked about Cassandra Savage being introduced in the first episode we covered in this particular set of episodes, but when she's having her little breakdown with Deathstroke mentions that Tara Markov washed out, but that Granny Goodness might still have use for her. So, really interested to see where that's going, and I'm sure Brion, if he was privy to that knowledge, he would be even more interested.
Well, that is when he went, I mean, yes, in the next episode, but just to cover it while we're at it, like, Brion just goes off on Nightwing, like, they have a little scramble because he was mad that they missed out on the opportunity, but it's like, how, like, if Brion had to go against Lady Shiva, he definitely would have been dead. Like, that's that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, without a doubt, yeah. And I did like the fact that, like, Deathstroke gave Lady Shiva the choice. He's like, which one you want?
Yeah.
Katana. I'll take Katana. Yeah. Yeah, that was badass.
And the comment on her sword being more powerful, too, and, like, that she just wanted it.
Yep.
Because Katana's sword, like, a note to silence, too, right?
I think she has. She didn't speak in this episode. I think that's a part of her character. I know with her sword, like, the Soul Eater, it inhabits the soul of her deceased husband.
Yeah.
And anybody that is killed by the sword, their soul is absorbed by the sword. So I do believe you're right on the vow of silence, but don't quote me on that.
I wonder if Katana trained Orphan at all.
That's a good question. Potential. I mean, obviously she has some working relationship with Batman, but I loved everything about that fight. You know, It did start off as Katana versus Lady Shiva. and Deathstroke versus Metamorpho, but then they kind of switched roles before the end. But even with like the little bit of character development we got there with Lady Shiva and Katana, on the other side of things, we talked about how Metamorpho, like, we just got to see such a cool showcasing of his powers, but not really get to hear him speak. But then, you know, not only is he just stretchy and whatnot, but he obviously, I think he can, like, change himself into, it seems like, different states of matter. Like, he turns into gas a couple of times, and that's when Deathstroke uses a grenade on him, and then that's when he kind of, like, shrieks out in pain, and his appearance changes, and you get the idea that he might not even be, like, a full-on human. I don't know what his deal is at all. I'm excited to learn more about him. But I kind of felt like I didn't know if this was a result of the damage that he took, that he looked different, or that he was just no longer to, like, hold up the guise that he had before. But that, the latter, is what I'm assuming. But he talks about Deathstroke's, like, hurts, doesn't it? He's like, yeah, sure it hurts. That's, but it's almost kind of like his... Exactly, I was going to say it's almost his Hulk moment. He's like, I'm basically living in constant pain. I've just learned to adapt. And I was like, okay, I like this character even more now.
Yeah, because he turned himself and Katana into trash bins. He turned himself into mud, and then had the little footprint where he, like, blocked his nose. And, like, you know, like when you try to pop your ears, you, like, popped his stomach, which is really funny. And then, like, it was really funny when they were about to, like, infiltrate where the helicopter was going into, and Oracle was like, oh, Batman's already in. And I was like, of course he is. Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah.
And then Batman's dialogue, he's such a dick. When Bane was like, oh, nobody gets into Santa Prisca without me knowing. And he's like, except for Robin, Superboy, McGann, Kid Flash, Zatanna. And they just start going at it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hilarious. I love that. And then Bane mentioned the fact that he's no longer on Venom. I guess he saw it as a crutch and has become stronger than he ever has. And it does seem like he's got, you know, Batman dead to rights. It's only when Metamorpho distracts him.
Yeah.
That gives him an escape. So.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I love the Batman scene, so everything about that episode was just really good.
Yeah. No, I definitely appreciated that one for not only just the inclusion of Batman so much, but just it really had some of the best action. I really can't overstate how much I appreciated some of those stealth sequences. They were just super atmospheric and really caught my attention. The only other thing I wanted to bring up is that we did get Dr. Irons again. I feel like he's been kind of floating around in the background. But then Silas Stone mentions the fact that his name is John Henry. And that really had me scratching my head, because I know from, like, American folklore, John Henry is, like, a character, like, he was known for basically he had the contest with the man-made, like, mining machine, like, drilling machine. He basically died proving that he was stronger than it. So I'm wondering if this is, like, I don't know anything about this character, but he looks like basically a robot version of Superman. But I'm wondering if it's, like, John Henry inside this, like, iron lung or something like that. I don't know. I'll have to do some research and follow up. But again, I invite anybody with more knowledge than either of us to submit your feedback. Let us know. What's up with John Henry?
We'd rather hear it from you than go into deep dives.
True.
I think the last big thing about that episode was the dialogue between Will Harper and Cheshire.
Yeah.
When she was lurking on her baby.
Yep, that was good, poignant stuff. Jade continues to be one of my favorite characters, and it really is heartbreaking to see she just continues to make the wrong choices. She really seemed like she had been rehabilitated. And you definitely see the pain in Will's eyes. But the other part of that scene, it did give Violet the opportunity to pick out her own last name, and she decides to become a Harper.
Violet Harper.
Yeah, the ice cream joke before that kind of made me roll my eyes, too.
Saw that coming, like, a mile away. And also, that is a lot of, like, ice cream for all of them. Like, even the baby had, like, 5 scoops. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. They like their ice cream. They've earned their ice cream at this point. They face life and death every day.
Good old strawberry ice cream at that.
Yeah. I like strawberry ice cream.
Me too. Love it.
All right. We're in good company. All right. I think that's everything I got for exceptional human beings. Oh, I guess part of the title there is we talked about the budding romances that are taking place, but I really highlighted Jefferson and Helga, but Violet and Brionne have obviously had some serious flirtations happening, and he calls her exceptional a couple of times throughout the episode.
Dork.
Yeah.
And for our next episode, we got another freak. Another freak. Cyborg is freaky.
I love that. Oh, that was great. That was great. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, this is... we talked about how the last episode kind of set up Victor Stone. This is very much that birth of Cyborg. Victor goes to confront Silas, and then the accident at Star Labs happens, the explosion, in which he is very, very seriously injured. And I will say, as far as talking about the vocal performance for Cyborg, it was a gentleman named Zeno Robinson, who I'm not familiar with his other work, but I will say, I thought he did a great job emoting and bringing some of that angst and rage, and I thought he actually sounded like a young Chris Rock when he was getting his angriest, when he's like, I'm not some 3-year-old kid trying to sell you mud pies or anything like that. This is my life. This matters. And all of that stuff was, even though, you know, it's a story I'm pretty familiar with, I've seen it before, I did think it was really well played, and just Silas's callous nature, I felt myself really heartbroken for Victor.
Yeah, it was definitely a good depiction of his background and his story. Everybody, learn cable management. It saves lives.
Yeah. I did notice how it was him just opening the door, just release some kind of cabling and hosing, and it was just, yeah, not very good fail-safes put into place there.
And a part of me at first was kind of like, well, that's kind of like an underwhelming way to go through the story, and then after a few seconds, and I was like, no, kind of the biggest things that happened were lives happened because of small mistakes. So it was kind of a good balance of you know, Victor could have done something, not Victor, Silas could have done something as simple as just going to his son's game. So something simple as tripping over a cable and going through this, it was a big thing.
Yeah. And the fallout of that, when, you know, the team rushes in and they find Silas there and he's relatively okay, but they go to find Victor and all you see is his arm underneath the debris and the blood's already starting to pool out. It was like, okay, that's not, you know, an unusual amount of blood for this show based on some of the things we've seen previously. But when you actually get to see his body there and his exposed organs and the blood and the fractured skull and his beating heart just exposed, it's done in a tone that's, I don't think it's going to give anybody nightmares, but it's still, for this show, it's easily some of the most gruesome stuff we've seen.
Yeah, they did not pull any punches on that. They just were just like, nope, this is a big deal. This is something that they're gonna have to work with, and it was very gruesome, very graphic. And even the security guards having to watch and the lab assistants and their reactions, they made that a very memorable moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the one guy that keeps telling Silas you need to say goodbye. A hospital's not even an option. He's not going to make it. And then when Silas does make the decision to, you know, incorporate the father box, he's still got that one guy that's constantly naysaying through the entire process. So
yeah, because they get the EKG set up and it's is it set up? Do you hear anything? It's well, yes and no. It's I think it's time for dialogue like that, bud.
Yeah. And it's... Sorry, I'm struggling a little bit because I was debating whether or not I wanted to bring up something from the final episode or not. But I'll go ahead and just bring it up with Cyborg's kind of birth here, he's like the product of a human that didn't necessarily die but came close to the brink of death, merged with a father box. I think it's kind of appropriate that Halo is kind of the one that helps, quote-unquote, cleanse him from his rage, because we've been kind of wondering what her deal is. So this was the first time we got to see her use that boom tube that we alluded to earlier on. But then in the next episode, you know, through Artemis's musings combined with what Superboy knows about mother boxes and father boxes, they come to the conclusion that Violet is actually a mother box, like, human, metahuman hybrid. Like, she is a living combination of the two. So it's interesting that Cyborg is a human father box hybrid, and it's a human mother box hybrid that kind of works in tandem with him. Yeah, and I'll be excited to see how that relationship fleshes out, because it already seems like Brion is jealous.
Yeah, the next episode is called Nightmare Monkeys, and we can kind of just put all of the Victor Stone story together and then finish up with Gar.
Okay.
But yeah, it was heartbreaking that, like, he has this spat with his dad, practically dies and comes back, tries to kill his dad, and then, like, they just kind of, like, carry on where they left off, where it's like, you still don't care about me, I'm just going to leave you entirely. So that was really heartbreaking that he was just kind of like, I'm 18, you can kick me out of here if you want, but I am not going back to him. Like, he is firm on, like, wanting to have nothing to do with his father right now. Understandably so.
Oh, yeah, very, very understandably so.
Brion had his line of, oh, he's going to tell you about patience now. Because, you know, he wants to go to college and be a football star. Like, all of this happened within a span of, like, 20 minutes. This is kind of a huge thing to process and deal with. And, you know, he's already fought Sphere and fought Violet and found out that he's part alien now. And the whole thing about, like, Gabrielle dying and the mother box dying and the soul of the mother box being in Gabrielle's body, and now Halo's just like, it was like, that was a lot to process out. He was like, I don't know what father mother shit you guys are talking about. And that's when Superboy was like, wait, who said anything about a father box? And we're learning a lot about Apocalypse and tech in just that dialogue. True.
Very true, very true. And then it did, like, I mentioned the fact that it kind of seemed like there might be the potential for Black Lightning Jefferson to maybe take Cyborg under his wing, and it was this exchange in this episode that kind of made me think that when you know Cyborg does deliver that dialogue that you're talking about, where he's like, mother boxes, father boxes, I don't know what you're talking about, but then Forager takes off his, like, enchantment gem and, like, shows him. He's like, are you freaked out by my appearance? And he's like, he falls to the ground. He's like, oh, he's like, I guess you are freaked out by my appearance. And he's like, no, I'm sorry, I was just thrown off guard. And then Jefferson's like, way off guard? And he's like, yeah, way off guard. Just felt like they had a connection there.
Yeah. It's like, hey, you're in the right crowd. We all relate.
Yeah, yeah. Only other thing is, it was Forager and Halo's first day of school. So Forager now has the moniker of Fred Bug with two G's.
Fred Bug with two G's.
And they do make a... always with two G's. And then later on, it's an optional two G's. But they do make a friend, Harper Rowe, who I... Just that name, I it stuck out to me, so I looked it up. And it's a character I don't really know much about. She has to be a relatively new character, given the fact that she was created by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. I know it's been a more recent run on Batman for them, but apparently she is one of the various young heroes that Batman takes under his wing, Bluebird. So I'll be interested to see how she is included in the series going forward.
The whole thing with Halo and Fred Bug was so annoying. Like, it made me want to call Lobo and tell him that he was still alive. Like, please just finish him off at this point, because I cannot stand this lack of pronouns anymore. Like, it was very frustrating.
Yeah. Well, there was a great joke where Harper asked, like, she's like, I'm going to history. And then he says, oh, we've got English, but we both speak the language flawlessly. And it's like, neither one of them actually do. And he's even worse off than she is.
No. Not at all. Stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we can kind of go ahead and pivot to episode 12. I guess just to really give another Freak episode 11 justice. I mean, it's hard to top what you did with that. Another freak. Little ad lib. But we did talk about how Brion and Nightwing had their kind of like come to blows and like talking about patience. That's kind of what allowed Brion to have that joke where he's like, he's going to tell you about patience next. But it was a really big character development for Brion, because there was a while where he really felt one note where it's just like, okay, this guy is just angry and wants to know about his sister, so he has to be told over and over again, exercise patience. But then Nightwing does have that realization. He's like, I think you know that we're doing everything that we can in our power. It's just you're really concerned with what's going on back in Markovia as well. So
Bat detective work at its finest.
Indeed. All right, so let's go ahead and finish off strong here with episode 12, Nightmare Monkeys. I gotta say, when I knew that monkeys were going to be involved, I was expecting a certain joke to happen. And when it didn't happen, I was a little disappointed. Not super disappointed, but just a little disappointed. But Superboy wasn't really even featured. Was he even in this episode at all? I know McGann was.
Yeah, he showed up in the hotel room towards the end, and this was the episode where he was talking. Oh, yeah, this is when they were talking with, like, adopting another super person. So the whole Father Box sphere thing happened in this episode.
True, yeah, you're right, yeah, that's correct, yeah. But other than that, we're basically catching up with Beast Boy. You know, earlier on in the season, we knew that Garfield Logan was kind of following in his mother's footsteps, pursuing his acting career, but we didn't really know the full backstory. We get the full backstory here via a very trippy experience, and you kind of told me off air, we talked about how in season one, the whole Hello Megan revelation was very reminiscent of WandaVision. No spoilers for WandaVision, but it kind of plays around with you know, TV shows within TV shows. But then this whole Beast Boy's trip with the good goggles, I was kind of happy that this was the final episode we did, because it was one of the most memorable episodes of Young Justice, and I think one of the strongest episodes of season three so far, just in terms of, like, we basically got a little mini episode of Doom Patrol Go.
Yeah, it was interesting, because and when DC Universe started, it was Titans that came out first, then Young Justice, and then Doom Patrol afterwards. But the Doom Patrol's debut was in Titans, because Beast Boy was part of the Doom Patrol and then ended up going with the Titans instead. Okay. So seeing three different versions of them in three different series back to back to back was interesting. But with how much I love Teen Titans, it was a really funny play on that. And the voice actor for Gar in the first two seasons was somebody different than the one in season three, because this is the voice actor that actually was in the original Teen Titans show. And they actually brought the cast back to do the other Doom Patrol members, but, like,
yeah,
the voice actors for the Teen Titans characters, and it was all fun. It was so silly and so fun.
Yeah, it was really great. It is as funny and, like, comical and lighthearted as it was. It was actually pretty poignant as well, even though Beast Boy's sitting there in his kind of, like, chibi style. He's welling up and has these tears in his eyes, and he doesn't want to lose his second mom. But, like, that provided all that backstory for me. Like, I had no idea, like, after he lost his mom before he went to go stay with McGann, that he had this time with the Doom Patrol, and I think her name was Rita, but she's Elastigirl. I didn't know there was an Elastigirl other than the one that's in the Incredibles. So great to get that revelation there. And then earlier on in the episode, we had that guy that he kept calling Minto, and they talked about whether or not they were both going to be home at the same time. You're like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
And I guess Granny Goodness had the line of dialogue that he was a stepdad, but then you learn that Minto was a member of the Doom Patrol that chickened out at the last second. They went off on this mission and died, and that he chickened out, and he was, you know, hiding off somewhere, and that after Beast Boy's time in season two with McGannon on the team, that he came back out of the woodwork and wanted to exploit Garfield, you know, basically to make money off of him. And that's kind of where we pick up here. He's an actor and dating Perdita, who we first got introduced to all the way back in season one. That was, you know, she was the princess. I can't remember the name of the country, but it's not super important. It's where Count Vertigo's from as well. But Wally West was basically transporting the heart that she needed transplanted. So, and it's her goggles, actually. Her good goggles are the ones that Beast Boy puts on in the first place. So she's kind of there the whole time watching him in this like mental fugue state. And she's the one that contacts both 911 and McGann to kind of try and rescue him. But by the time McGann gets there, Gar has kind of figured things out on his own through his own kind of spiritual journey, in which we get a great return of Wally West. I say quote unquote Wally West because it's not really Wally West. It's this monkey god that Gar has decided to, he chose the voice of Wally West to voice this monkey. And it's kind of a great retcon because Young Justice, obviously, you know, the first two seasons, there's always been kind of a gap between the seasons, but back when the show was first coming out, I feel like it came out at a time where individual, like, continuities felt a obligation to kind of come up with their own origin to fit within their own world. And as much as I appreciated the fact that, you know, Beast Boy got kind of part of his powers from Mars and from McGann, this very much, like, retconned the fact that he was chosen by this monkey god to, you know, inhabit this power specifically. So
yeah, there was a lot to break down. I didn't really think of through the monkey god thing too much. I don't know if it was just kind of like a conscious thing. Just it's like he needed something to get out of it, so it was like instead of him believing in himself, like he kind of just brought up this moniker of a monkey god that helped him help himself get out of it. Yeah, I was more intrigued with all the backstory was than I was the whole monkey god thing.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah. And I guess the most WandaVision moment for me is when he's there on the set of Hello, Megan, and like he's trying to interrupt and his mom's like, oh, you weren't in this episode. And then it's like, were you even born yet?
Yeah.
Like, and just that question, it's like very, very trippy and kind of like haunting. Very I dig it. I like the creepy vibes. But I guess the like major is like in previous seasons, I know you did like a really you put effort into like, you know, choosing the particular episode arcs that we were going to do, and then just kind of out of the necessity of time here in preparation for season four, we just decided to break this up into four parts. But I feel like this kind of was a perfect episode to end in, not only just it being so memorable, but in terms of like the story, Beast Boy is the one with the information now that Granny Goodness is at least somewhat involved with the light and not good. So I feel like that's going to put him directly back into the proceedings with the team and not being an actor. So hopefully in terms of the story, this was a nice little stopping point.
Yeah, so the show itself, it ran 13 episodes, took a 6-month break. I think that's Doom Patrol aired and then came back. So I'm like looking at the list and feel bad that we kind of forgot an episode that actually was like their halfway mark, but we'll add it to the part three. So I mean, they just kind of made it easy for me, where it was like, hey, there's this many episodes, it's already split in half, just split these in half. And you know how much I loved that League of Shadows episode. So that was a perfect way to wrap up part one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was a great way to just kind of be like, this is where we are right now. Let's get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's obviously like the big through lines for the season still are that there are various arms or tentacles of the light that are invested in weaponizing metahumans, and we've got this they've always, well, I guess with the exception of season one, where it's just the light. In season two, they have their partnership with the Reach. This time around, their partnership is with Darkseid. And I guess that's one thing we didn't really bring up with episode one. It's the fact that you did mention we got to see the strength of the relationship of Darkseid and Vandal. But there really was just that great moment where Vandal says, you know, to protect our mutual investment, I need resources. And Darkseid gives it to him. And,
yeah,
you know, Vandal says, your benevolence and wisdom strengthens our relationship. He says, indeed. But there's a lot of menace behind that. And we know that this partnership that they have is temporary. Eventually, there's going to be the last man standing in the war between Earth and Apocalypse. What's making you snicker?
I'm just picturing a meme where you take the heads of Vandal Savage and Darkseid over Leia and Han Solo, just saying, I love you. I know. I feel like it's just a perfect fit.
That's funny. Well, there's got to be a Darkseid joke in there somewhere, but I don't have it. Whatever. Anything else you feel like you need to bring up in terms of the six episodes that we covered here?
We kind of hinted on a little, not hinted, we talked about it a little bit, but I just remembered like the exact words when we talked about Darkseid of when Tim Drake was like, yeah, we should operate like the Lightworks, except the opposite, the anti-light. And Wonder Woman's like, so we're the dark? Mm-hmm. What happens when we operate in the dark? So it's very, very foreboding, like. What's next?
Yeah. Poor choice of words. She made him eat those words pretty quickly. Well, and then you bring up both Wonder Woman and Tim Drake. That makes me immediately think of Wonder Girl. We haven't seen her since the beginning of the season when she got dumped. Yeah. I love Wonder Girl. What's going on with her?
We got a lot of episodes to go.
True. Well, I think that's everything that I wanted to highlight on these six episodes. It's nice to get back into the world of Young Justice. Again, I apologize to the listeners and those that have submitted feedback that our coverage has been a little sporadic, but, you know, it's the perfect time to get back into the world of Young Justice and get excited for it with season four literally debuting next week. So,
oh, Brion and Halo finally kissed.
Oh, yeah, you had that little montage of everybody kissing. Who was it? It was Jefferson and Helga, Superboy and McGann. And then Brion and Violet, yeah.
What are you wearing? Like, my engagement ring. Ooh.
Yeah. Definitely more innuendos in this season, but nothing over the top.
They're all adults now.
They are. Well, I think that does it. So, anything you want to let the people know about that you've got going on that's not necessarily associated with animation deliberation, my friend?
No, it mostly is with animation deliberation. Sorry, I'm behind on Visions. I am catching up. There is one episode that I absolutely fell in love with, and I'm super excited to talk about it. Season five of My Hero just ended, so excited to chat about that. We have a My Hero movie coming out in U.S. theaters October, if not November. We have Demon Slayer starting back up too, so once that ends up, got a lot of things on the anime end to talk about.
Yeah, I noticed on Hulu, it looks like Demon Slayer, they've started breaking up the Mugen Train arc into episodes, so I saw that they have the first episode available, but I'm going to wait for at least a few episodes to be available before I dive back into the world of Demon Slayer, but quite excited to do so. Other than that, I know Cowboy Bebop has its live-action series. Oh, go ahead.
No, I forgot about the Cowboy Bebop stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know the Netflix live-action series, the trailer's out there, and we're obviously an animation-focused podcast, but this is going to be one of those opportunities where we kind of do cover an adaptation, because we'll cover the celebrated 26 episode season. I wanted to break it up, kind of like Zuhair had done for Young Justice, but I think just for the sake of time, we're probably going to have to do it in more of a truncated fashion. But yeah, definitely look forward to that. Outside of the animated realm of things, I have been doing a lot of casting, maybe a little bit too much casting, but I did want to make mention and definitely show my appreciation to all the people that have welcomed me on. So I appeared on Captain Game Show. That's a part of the Infinite Potato Alliance, hosted by John Irons, who is a member of the Stranded Panda community. So check out strandedpanda.com, facebook.com, Stranded Panda Chat. That's the network that we're a part of. I also appeared on some episodes of PandaVision for What We Do in the Shadows, and two various ongoing Bingers coverage for 007 No Time to Die. I did that with Matt Carroll and Haley Hobbs. And then also we're doing the Halloween films. I'm doing that with Ashley Coffin and Karen Huffstetler for Halloween Kills. So you'll be hearing a lot of my voice for better or worse, depending on what you tune into. And that's T-00-N.
I'm excited for when we do Cowboy Bebop, because like a lot of the stuff that we've covered together, like I've watched it and you're watching it for the first time. So it's going to be a nice flip of you like getting to see my reactions of Cowboy Bebop. So yeah, I'm really mm-hmm. excited to do that with you.
Yeah, likewise. There's lots to be excited for here. So I encourage everybody to keep tuning in. That's T-00-N-I-N.
Stay whelmed.
Boom.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SPChat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.